Welcome to Come and See, your podcast for finding truth in a world of chaos. Brought to you by Living Waters Abide Ministries. With host and founder, Richard Case, and co-host and retreat leader, Kathy Riccone. Join us every weekday at this time to discuss news, spend time in the Word, and receive answers to your personal questions about living life in God's truth. And now your host, Richard Case.
Good morning, everybody. This is End Times Friday. This is the next part we have with our good friends, Eric and Ephraim from Israel. The last time we talked about the bodies of the hostages been finally returned, so everyone's accounted for. The discovery is the abuse and the torture against the hostages for all that time. That is a travesty, pure evil, wicked. What normally happens in the world is that there are the international courts bring charges against war crimes like that. Because it's this whole dynamic, which we won't get into all the thoughts about, the upside down thought about Israel is that they are the ones actually being called the perpetrators of this, which is awful because they don't. And so the only question that you had made a comment about was that Israel itself will begin to look at taking justice by trying these people and bringing them to justice. Is the population of Israel supporting that? And where do you think that will go? We'll just spend a few minutes before we get into Iran.
Okay. So yeah, the population of Israel is 110% behind bringing these terrorists to justice, in particular the Nakba terrorists who were responsible for the October 7th surprise attack on Israel, which killed 1,200 people, injured 3,000 people, and started this whole war. You know, there's just a very, very broad consensus whether Israel will actually use the death penalty against them is a question which is now being discussed in the Knesset, and the actual format for bringing these hundreds of terrorists to justice is being discussed in the Knesset now. So we don't know exactly how it's going to happen, but everyone is fully behind it. And I should add that I noticed when I was in the States that it's a popular misconception that even though throughout the war there were a lot of protests against Netanyahu and his government for various reasons, virtually the whole population was fully behind the war. Everyone in Israel understood that this was a defensive war and that unless Hamas is defeated, they will come back and try and destroy us again and try and rearm. And even the disagreements were about whether we should be making more compromises in the war or perhaps do a ceasefire in order to get the hostages back that were being held by Hamas. But the righteousness, the justification, the need for the war was agreed upon by everybody. But some people said, even though we really do need to destroy Hamas and its capabilities so that they don't do this again as they have promised to, but we just have to sacrifice that war goal in order to bring back our hostages. And that was the more left-wing view of things. And the right-wing view of things was more, no, even though there are hostages, unfortunately, our higher priority is defeating Hamas for the sake of the entire nation and our entire future. So we have to just keep on pushing ahead and not compromising and not giving in to the exorbitant demands of Hamas to get to the hostages back.
So we'll go into this in the future sessions to discuss as they move down that path, you know, what the impact is, the world's reactions, and particularly, which we won't have time at the moment, is, and Denny had raised this up, is that, well, shouldn't the more moderate, like Saudi Arabia, et cetera, be supporting Israel in this? And interesting enough, it's flipping the other direction, and anti-Semitism is increasing in spite of the truth. We'll get into a discussion about what is happening with that, what the implication of that is, and we'll try to go underneath it all, is that in spite of the truth, why does the world ignore that truth? That's still an enigma. But we'd like to talk a little bit about Iran right now. What we hear from America is Iran is collapsing, and there's protesting, but they're killing protesters. Israel hasn't gone in. America said they were going to go in, but they haven't. And what we heard, by the way, is that Israel told them not to because they weren't ready for it. But they're amassing resources in the Persian Gulf. So would you, you know, maybe both of you could share at the moment, first of all, what is happening inside of Iran? What is the status of their country, economy, conditions? What's happening?
We can start with the economy and the social cohesion and then go into what happened. So the currency in Iran is called the rial, R-I-A-L. I think that's how you pronounce it, rial. And it's in total collapse, both in the official exchange rate as well as the free market exchange rate, which takes place in the Iranian bazaar in Tehran, where the money changers are basically exchanging currency for currency. I mean, the inflation rates in the, you know, double digits, and that was what triggered these initial protests in Iran about 5 weeks ago. They started in late December of 2025. And these protests started in what they call the merchant class. That is, those middle class merchants who have shops in the bazaar, you know, this is the open air market in Iran where you can, where many, many people in Tehran do their shopping. These people were in support of the overthrow of the Shah back in 1978, when the Shah was removed from power. This was the same group of people which triggered the overall efforts, which ended up resulting in the overthrow of the Shah. And then only later did the clerics come in to run the country. So the riots started there, and then they proceeded across the rest of the country. And it's really not known today exactly how many people were killed. There are lots of videos that have emerged where, so the leader of the country, the supreme leader who declares divine, authority over the people, declared absolute. All the security forces in support of the government went ahead and armed themselves with machine guns and literally, not figuratively, literally were mowing down protesters, men, women, and children, none of which were armed, and just killing them en masse. And the estimates are ranging anywhere between 5,000 to 30,000 people killed, including those who were imprisoned. Now, when President Trump announced, you know, he said, we're going to help you, and then he hesitated because he was being told that those in prison weren't going to be killed. But then Israel's intelligence agencies presented evidence in Washington proving that, in fact, the government was lying and they were actually executing those in prison with or without trial. It doesn't matter. If it's a trial, it's a monkey trial. It's not a real trial anyway. That put away this whole idea that these people might be spared. So I don't think anyone really knows. And the government itself announced that over 3,500 people were killed because they want to drive home the point that if you continue demonstrating, you're going to die. Okay? Be killed. So and for the moment, it appears that the protests have receded. But every day we're hearing about an explosion taking place in a different part of. Just yesterday, there was a huge explosion in the open air market in Tehran. And no one's claiming credit. It's not like a terror group claiming credit. And there was a bombing in the near the, one of the port cities the other day in Iran. And no one's claiming credit. Israel's actually went public and denied any association with any of these things. So Israel's not being accused of doing any of this, but all kinds of reasons are coming, like a gas leak or electric fire. And maybe it's true. I don't think anyone really knows. I'm sure the Mossad in Israel probably knows what's really going on. And none of us really know publicly what's going on, but there are these incidents that are happening. So in the meantime, as you said earlier, in this broadcast, the United States was talking about it, you know, launching an attack to try to come to sort of the aid of these protesters. It was called off. In large part, it's believed it was called off for a combination of reasons. First and foremost, it's because there weren't the proper forces in the Middle East from CENTCOM. This is the U.S. Bases here in the Middle East. There weren't enough forces in the Middle East to be able to deal with any kind of attack on Iran. In addition, the allies to the United States, including Israel and then Saudi Arabia and Qatar and the United Emirates, on their own went and talked with the Trump administration at one level or another to basically say, you know, we're not ready. In Israel's case, they said, look, we're not ready to do this, nor are you, the United States, are you ready? And in the case of some of these Arab states who just prefer not to have an attack of any kind at the time being. Most of these countries in the Arab countries in the Middle East, like in Iran, just the way it is. That is isolated, weak, but run by fanatics and they can't supposedly do much harm to Saudi Arabia's oil fields. And I can go into another in a future episode and explain to your leaders why they have this view. Israel has a slightly different view. But in any case, so since that time, in the last two and a half weeks, enormous armaments have been sent to the Middle East. The aircraft carrier Abraham Lincoln is here now, and there are large fleets of bomber jets that have been sent here. But most importantly are the anti-missiles, what are called Patriot missiles. This is the United States Defense Department. I think they're produced by Lockheed, if I'm not mistaken. And then the THAAD, the THAAD, that are also the anti-missile systems. And there's just a huge shortage of them. I just read where Lockheed is like tripling its manufacturing capacity because there's a shortage of these kinds of missiles. The United States just agreed to sell Saudi Arabia a whole fleet of Patriot missiles, but they're not available right now because they're being used between what's going on in Ukraine and what's going on here in the Middle East. There's a huge shortage of these missiles. And likewise, the Israelis, we have our own systems called the Arrow, which are these anti-ballistic missiles. We have the Arrow 2 or 3, now testing the 4, and number 5, Arrow 5 is in development, and we have a shortage of those as well. And so for all these reasons, it's my belief that things have been postponed. In the meantime, Iran has said, well, we want to negotiate. You know, and they reached out through their connections to Steve Witkoff and said, we want to start the negotiations again. And so then it was agreed that they're going to be held in Turkey. Turkey said, we will host the negotiation. Turkey's trying to become a power here in the Middle East. And Israel, by the way, is about as worried of Turkey as it is of Iran. America has a slightly different view of Turkey, but that's our view from here. And so they wanted to host these negotiations. And it was proposed that in addition to Turkey, that Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, and Qatar were also going to be attending these negotiations. And on paper, it kind of makes sense. These countries are the, you know, Iran would never accept Israel attending these things, of course. But these other countries are being truly being impacted by whatever decision gets made. So maybe they don't have a vote in the end of the day, but they were invited to observe. And just yesterday, Iran announced that, nope, we're not going to negotiate in Turkey, and we're not going to allow these other entities to be, you know, is Saudi Arabia to be there or not, because all we want to talk about are the nuclear program, nuclear weapons program. And so this is Iran's way of doing several things. Most importantly, it is trying to restrict the negotiations to only its nuclear weapons program. And yet the other countries in the Middle East, Israel being one of them, wants to include other things, such as the support for these terror proxies like the Houthis and Hezbollah and others, as well as this huge missile program that they have. And the only purpose of these missiles is to attack other countries. They're not defensive missiles. They're offensive missiles, okay? And so Iran's insisting that they not be a part of the discussions. And that's another reason that you should exclude these Arab countries from any of the negotiations. And oh, by the way, we don't want to meet in Turkey. We don't want to meet in Istanbul. We want to meet in Muscat. That's in Oman, which is one of the countries in the Persian Gulf. And Oman plays this role of mediator between Iran and other countries because it has a normal relations with Iran. I'm not sure I understand all the reasons why, but it does. And so the United States acquiesced. Now, you can ask, why would the United States agree to this, you know, change in terms the last day? And why would it exclude these Arab allies of the United States from these discussions? And I think it's my theory, and it's just a theory, is that, you know, I think everyone's concluded. I know here in Israel, the feeling is this is a waste of time. Talking with the Iranians is like, you know, speaking to the wind. These people lie through their teeth. They can't be trusted. And so why even about wasting your time? But there's also a feeling that, well, the Trump administration, either internally, because these are guys who like the art of the deal, they like deals with real estate, therefore they much prefer to negotiate than to fight. I personally think it's because it's buying more time to get all the defensive gear here in the Middle East that they need before they launch an attack. Why else would, I mean, and hopefully your listeners, I mean, we're recording this on a Wednesday, February 4th, just yesterday. Now, Iran, I mean, it's mind-boggling. Here you are trying to enter negotiations with a major superpower over a clear part of your program. What do? You launch a drone attack against one of its major aircraft carriers. And in the same day, you send these gunboats to surround one of its tankers and say, we want to board because we're going to take you to, you know, our port in Iran, and you with your oil and your crew. They wouldn't take them, for no doubt, they wouldn't take them hostage. They were planning on negotiating over these hostages. Probably most of the crew wasn't American anyway, but doesn't really matter. It was an American flag. Why would any, that's what people in the West don't understand. This is not a normal country. This is not a country, whether it's a dictatorship, a democracy, or an oligarchy, whatever it is, doesn't matter. You know, in the West, even dictatorships during the, you know, over time, people think logically. They think, you know, what's the best thing for me? What's the best thing for my country and my people? And how do I get it? These people in Iran don't think this way. You know, for a large part of the Iranian Revolutionary Guard, they don't want a negotiated deal. They don't want sanctions relief. Why? Because the Iranian Revolutionary Guard controls about 50% of the economy. Most of the industries, most of the trade, most of the ships that get that export or import goods are all controlled by this Revolutionary Guard. And they make money, a lot of money. Their families don't live in Iran, the leaders of these of the Revolutionary Guard. They live abroad in Europe. They live lavish lifestyles. I think it was one of the leaders' wives was an instructor at Emory University in Atlanta. I could be mistaken. It's one of the universities in Atlanta, either yeah. Georgia Tech.
Emory.
Or,
yep.
And they were just kicked out. And you go to London, it's filled with Iranian, you know, families of the leadership of the Revolutionary Guard, because they don't want their families living in the situation they placed their country in. They make a ton of money. They fence it to, you know, across the banks across Europe, and their families live nice, normal, beautiful lives in Europe. And so they want the status quo. And so the United States is entering negotiations with an entity that really kind of likes the sanctions to be in place the way they are, because they make a lot of money from them.
Yeah.
They're not incented to negotiate. So we're all going through this, song and dance in Muscat over the next few days. And Vitikoff thinks he can negotiate something. But in the end, I'd be very surprised. Most people here are starting to hunker down. Israel, we're all clearing out our bomb shelters and the rooms in our homes that are reinforced concrete to prevent us. We're all getting ready and expect sirens to go off. I don't know. I thought it'd be last weekend, but I guess it's not. It's going to probably be in the coming yeah. week or two.
Rabbi, is the population keeping up on all this and understanding it, and then, you know, saying, you know, probably there is going to be an attack and we got to be get ready for it?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a lot of unknowns. We have no, you know, inside information about what America will do. We just are pretty confident that if America does do something, that we will get attacked, regardless of whether we have anything to do with it. So everyone's pretty much just waiting for the inevitable, that we'll be heading back to the bomb shelters, like Eric said. And in a way, we sort of welcome it, because Iran has to be taken down. You know, the governing forces of Iran are just going to continue to arm terror organizations who are determined to destroy Israel and to kill as many Jews all over the world as they possibly can. So we all really want that to happen, you know, or at the very least severely weaken them, even if there's not regime change. So people are, you know, we're prepared to pay that price, I think, even though it's not very pleasant, and it could be a lot worse than the 12-day war that we experienced. But as Eric was describing, that we're no longer willing to have massive terrorist forces on our border ready to attack us, like we allowed to happen in Lebanon with Hezbollah and in Gaza with Hamas. And because of Iran's sophisticated weapons, it's basically the exact same thing right now. We have this massive terrorist entity that is determined to destroy us and has the ability to do huge amounts of damage. They're just, you know, 1,000 miles away, but they can still be as effective in their determination to destroy us and kill a lot of people and cause tremendous damage, all targeted against civilians, of course. Yeah. Don't know if that needs to be pointed out, but they just want to kill as many Jews and hopefully destroy the Jewish state. as effectively and quickly as they can, but they're willing to wait 100 years if that's what it takes.
Yeah. As we finish this session, just Eric, maybe you can just give us a perspective on assuming that America recognizes they're liars, cheaters, and there's nothing really to negotiate. Do you think that they will then attack, and will Israel assist in that attack?
The short answer is I don't know. There's several strains of thought here in Israel amongst the defense establishment. It's not, I almost can't be sure of anything, but I'd be extremely surprised if Israel did anything preemptively. Okay, I just don't, it would just jeopardize all of the conversations with the United States. And of course, Israel values the United States as a strong ally, so it's not going to happen. So the question is so the expectation is that if missiles are lobbed our way, then we will unleash the gates of hell as best we can on the Iranian Revolutionary Guard. What the United States will do is really up for, I'm sure there's a lot of planning going on in the Pentagon. There's a lot of thinking what to do. And I'm not a military strategist, so I don't really know. I'm not sure regime change is what any goal here at all. I'd be surprised, knowing what I've seen from the Trump administration, that regime change, that's been tried and it hasn't succeeded. It didn't work in Iraq. It didn't work in Afghanistan. And I don't think the United States, and I think, you know, I think I agree with them, it's not the role of the United States to implement democracy around the world anymore. Yeah. It doesn't work. Okay. But I think the goal is to inflict serious damage into the regime, into its forces, the forces that are able to put down the protests. And to do that, I don't think it requires boots on the ground. I certainly hope it doesn't. I really wouldn't want to see American casualties here in the Middle East anymore. I think it's been more than enough over the years. I'll remind your listeners that Israel has never and never will ask for any American troops to be placed anywhere in Israel to help in its defense. Israel is perfectly capable of defending itself. It just needs help with the development and production of some of the arms and the procurement of some of the arms. In any case, I'm hoping that everything can be done from the air, and whatever intelligence units in the Mossad that that Israel has to play, and whatever CIA units are sitting in Iran, and I'm sure they have a role in something, doing something here. But I really hope and pray that there aren't going to be any boots on the ground, because I wouldn't want to see any casualties on the American side here. But I would hope that they destroy whatever infrastructure the Revolutionary Guard has and destroy their way of making money and destroy the arms that they have to put down those rebellion and to enable the protesters to reemerge. All the reports I've seen coming from the protesters in Iran that we see published, you know, they're putting together arms. I mean, you see videos of protesters in Iran now showing the next time we go out, we're going out with these, and they're pointing to the machine guns. So I don't know. We'll see what happens.
Do I have a moment to share something? Also, I heard an interview on the radio with interviewing one of the leaders of the protests in Iran, speaking in Persian. It was being translated. And he said, "We hope that the attack is not the usual American attack, because we're afraid for civilian casualties and a lot of damage to things that are not necessarily military taxes. We really, really are hoping that the attack will be like Israel attacks, which is much more precise and targeted and minimizing casualties and damage beyond the actual targets."
That's funny.
Yeah, they're praying for an Israeli style attack.
Well, we thank you both. Very insightful. We will stay tuned, everybody. We'll be seeing it probably in the next couple of weeks, what actually does happen, and a lot to play out. So we'll be praying for Israel, praying for your protection, and for just wisdom about how this all comes down. And we'll look forward to hearing in more. So thank you so much. And everybody, if you have any questions, send it to us at abideministries.com, questions@abideministry.com. And we'd love to ask our friends anything that's on your mind. So we'll look forward to seeing you soon. Thanks, guys.
Thank you for joining us for today's episode of Come and See, your podcast for truth in a world of chaos. Brought to you by Living Waters Abide Ministries. Send us your questions and comments, and tune in tomorrow for more answers to your personal questions about living life in God's truth. Remember, God's will is best and none better. His truth brings peace in this world of chaos.